Our last case this morning is 2020-726, the State of Ohio versus Tyrone LeGrand II for the appellant, Mr. Zeleznikar.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Frank Zeleznikar. I'm an assistant prosecuting attorney for Cuyahoga County, and I'll be representing the State of Ohio in this matter. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, a sentence of 15 years to life and a sentence of life with parole eligibility after 15 years is the exact same sentence. Both sentences are indefinite life sentences. Both sentences gives the offender the opportunity for parole after 15 years. And both sentences comply with the General Assembly's intent that offenders who are convicted of murder be sentenced to a life term and have parole eligibility after 15 years. And that's exactly what happened in this case. In this case, Tyrone LeGrand was convicted of murder with a 3-year firearm specification, along with other offenses. On the base count, the trial court imposed a sentence of life imprisonment with parole eligibility after 15 years to follow the 3-year mandatory firearm specification. There's no disagreement between the parties that a court, when it imposes a sentence, is not required to give a verbatim recitation of the actual statute. Rather, the only question before this court is whether or not there is an actual substantive difference between life with parole eligibility after 15 years.
Why does the state care? I mean what's it matter to the state if he gets resentenced to match exactly what the statute says?
Well, there's two reasons. First of all, There's the fact of judicial resources. It's the exact same sentence. We'd be remanding this case back to go to the trial court to give the exact same sentence, only worded differently.
Would the state be okay if it was just sent back for a nunk-pro-tunk?
Well, in this case, it's going to go back for a nunk-pro-tunk anyway because of
right.
the failure for the consecutive sentences. If this court found that a nunk-pro-tunk would be appropriate, then yeah, a nunk-pro-tunk would be acceptable because, again, it's the exact same sentence. At this point, Mr. LeGrand has a parole eligibility date set with.
If it's the exact same sentence, why would we need a nunk-pro-tunk?
Well, you really wouldn't. But if that was what this court wanted to do, the state wouldn't have any opposition to that because really what it is this is really just a matter of semantics.
Well, does it matter that the judgment entry imposed a sentence of life without mention of parole eligibility until several sentences later? Should that be clarified?
I don't believe it needs to be clarified because I think if you look at the Ohio Administrative Code, the ODRC has seen what the sentence was, understands that this defendant will be getting parole eligibility after 15 years. If you look at the Ohio Administrative Code, for example, 5120-210G and 5120-210K, those portions of the Ohio Administrative Code indicate what a prison sentence is and what the ODRC is supposed to impose when someone is sentenced to prison under a murder count and aggravated murder count, respectively.
Counsel, is there any evidence that the ODRC is interpreting these two different sentences in any other way? Everyone is getting their parole eligibility in 15 years?
There's no evidence that they are looking at it differently, especially when you look at the OA, the Ohio Administrative Code. If you look at 5120-210G and 5120-210K, which tell the ODRC how to impose a sentence for murder and aggravated murder respectively, it uses the same phrasing in both of those. It says under the G subsection, if someone's serving a sentence for murder, they become eligible for parole after serving X amount of dates. When you look at K, it says when someone's serving a prison sentence for aggravated murder, they become eligible for parole after serving X amount of days, depending on which version of aggravated murder it is. So I don't see how the parole board or the ODRC would interpret these two statutes differently, especially when the Ohio Administrative Code has the same phrasing for both of them. So the only question is really whether or not there is an actual substantive difference between these two sentences. And in the lower courts, particularly in the second district case, State versus Duncan, which the 8th District has relied on, In that case, the Duncan court stated that by imposing life with parole eligibility after 15 years on a murder conviction, the Duncan court stated that the trial court had essentially taken an indefinite 15-year-to-life sentence and had turned it into a de facto definite sentence. On its face, that reasoning is flawed. All you have to do is look to see what the definition of definite and indefinite sentences are. Now, the Ohio Revised Code doesn't have a definition for definite and indefinite sentences, so we look at the, I've cited to Black's Law Dictionary. And an indefinite sentence in Black's Law Dictionary is defined as a maximum prison term that the parole board can reduce through statutory authorization after the inmate has served the minimum time required by law. And it also defines it as a sentence that does not have a fixed, is not for a fixed amount of time. Now, neither sentence, 15 years to life with, or life with parole eligibility after 15 years, is for a fixed amount of time. Rather, both of them are maximum sentences of life that can be reduced by the parole board. Therefore, both of them are indefinite sentences, just by the definition of what an indefinite sentence is. Black's Law Dictionary also defines what a definite sentence is. And a definite sentence is a sentence that is for a fixed length of time rather than for an unspecified duration. Neither sentence, 15 years to life, or life with parole eligibility after 15 years, is for a fixed amount of time. There is no out date. Rather, the defendant's, when he gets out, is going to be relied on based upon what the parole board determines when he becomes eligible for parole. Really, this case on its face, I believe, is pretty simple. This court has one dispositive issue to determine, and that is whether or not 15 years to life and life with parole eligibility are two separate sentences, or whether those two phrasings have any legal distinction, legal effect. And the state would submit that they don't. They are the exact same sentence. And all the state would ask that this court look at the common sense reasoning and common sense reading of the statute, apply the common sense definition of what's an indefinite and definite sentence, and find that the trial court, or that the Court of Appeals erred by finding that the sentence of life with parole eligibility after 15 years is an invalid sentence that needs to be resentenced back to the trial court in order for the trial court to impose its exact same sentence but rephrased differently. If there's any other questions, I just reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Hardwick.
May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor. This case is about whether the General Assembly has the authority to make subtle distinctions in sentence, distinctions of emphasis. And the question isn't really whether, the question is this isn't the policy question of whether it makes sense to make it to distinguish between a sentence that emphasizes life and a possibility of release, or a sentence that emphasizes 15 years and the possibility of life that comes after it. If this court rules for the state, this court is obliterating the legislature's ability to make subtle distinctions in sentences. If under the state's theory, in effect, the legislature, if it wants to make a subtle distinction, has to pass this twice. Once they have to pass it once, get it signed by the governor, have a court tell them, well, we don't think that's a big enough distinction, and then they have to go back and, then they have to go back and pass it again. They shouldn't have to do that. And the policy argument that there's no difference between these sentences is a policy argument that's really for the legislature to decide.
Let me ask you about that. I mean, it's kind of a pretty fundamental rule of appellate practice that to get something reversed on appeal, you have to, one, show that there was error below, and two, show that your client was prejudiced by that error. So how has your client suffered any prejudice from what looks like an identical sentence to, regardless of if the wording wasn't exactly the same?
Well, it's the prejudice of when the legislature has made a distinction of being on the wrong side of the distinction the legislature has made.
But how does that hurt your, but again, I think you have to show that your client has suffered some prejudice. I mean, do the, just sound the words prejudice your client, or what? I mean, what is the prejudice here?
Well, it's the framing of the issue. The framing matters. The framing of whether you emphasize that a sentence is the rest of his life, he might get released, or what the framing of it is. This is.
But you're not saying he's going to get a parole hearing at any different time, or that they're going to the parole board is going to continue or going to consider any different things, are you?
No, I'm not. The parole board, he will be considered the same way either. He will be considered the same time, either way. And I can't say.
Counsel, I'm going to use your own analogy in your brief about a half empty, half full.
Okay.
I have a glass, 16 ounces, put 8 ounces of water in it. Whether you call it half empty or half full, it's still 8 ounces of water, right?
Right, yes it is.
So what's the framing? You were using the word framing. Why is the framing prejudicial to your client?
Because it sets the default when you look at the sentence. And there's a reason why there's a whole literature about it, about half empty, half full, because the perspective does matter whether you look at it more, in that case, it's more optimism versus pessimism. But the framing matters whether you look at the sentence and say, you are going to prison for life, and or you are going to prison for 15 years, and maybe we'll keep you for life. I'm not claiming that this is a huge distinction. I'm not saying that it is a distinction. But I'm saying it's not a distinction that makes a difference in when the parole board hears it. But when the General Assembly says, for aggravated murder, which is considered much more serious than, in this case, it's not even purposeful murder, it's felony murder. It's felonious assault bootstrapped to murder. Right. The General Assembly can say that we want this sentence to be called something more. And that's what this case is about. It's about, can the General Assembly have that authority to do that? Can they say that for aggravated murder, we want the trial courts to frame it in terms of life?
So we're going to limit what a trial judge can say.
When we say we, not this court,
no,
the General
court,
Assembly.
That's what you're asking. Huh?
No, I'm saying the General Assembly has limited that. I'm saying this court should recognize that the General Assembly has limited that. I'm not asking this court to impose a limit that's not already there.
But haven't we generally said as long as the trial judge tells the defendant what the penalty is, no matter what the words, we generally enforce it, yes?
Well, the words words matter, and sometimes you can have words that don't make a difference. And for instance, at the entry, the court said life in prison with eligibility of parole after 15 years. At the hearing, the judge said with possibility of parole after 15 years. The General Assembly has never made the difference between eligibility of parole and possibility of parole. Those are two different words, but the legislature has never decided to distinguish between those two. And just for its worth, I think one of this members asked about whether the trial court could issue a nunk-pro-tunk. No, they couldn't, because the trial court made the same mistake at the sentencing hearing that it did in the entry. And you can't, there's nothing, if the trial court had done this correctly at the sentencing hearing and had just messed up the entry, a nunk-pro-tunk could issue, because you can make the entry conform to what actually happened in court. But what happened in court was just as wrong as what happened in the entry. And this court, I say, has made similar distinctions. Looking back at this court in the whole area of community control, the Brooks and Fraley line of cases where the legislature said you have to tell a defendant that they will serve a maximum term of X, 5 years or so.
What about Bunnell, though? We don't require them to give a talismanic incantation of the words in the statute. Your colleague says that the trial judge got all the right language in there, maybe not in the order you would have it. How do we balance that?
Well, I'd say, again, it comes back to what the distinctions the legislature found was important, not what the state argues is important. If the legislature makes a distinction, court should honor it.
But if you look at the progression of how these statutes went into play over the years, it looks like when you compare parole sentences, the eligibility for parole with aggravated murder and when there were different categories of when you would be eligible for parole, the legislature, it doesn't look like it intentionally created some differences. It just looks like things kind of evolved as they did. So why should we find that there's a distinction that matters?
Well, first of all, because the General Assembly has adjusted both the murder, the statutes that the murder sentences in and aggravated murder. They've adjusted them both, and they've never decided to make them the same. And the General Assembly can change its mind if it wants to. Again, in the Brooks and Fraley example, this court used to enforce what the General Assembly said, that you have to tell a judge, tell a defendant a specific period of time that they will serve if they violate.
I understand, but I'm saying that those, when you look at the statutes as they evolved over time, they don't perfectly align in a parallel fashion with the language. And when I look at it, it's difficult for me to see anything in there that says there's a reason for the distinction between the two statutes as they've evolved. Why should we find it here?
Well, because I mean the same.
Because you're saying that we need to pay attention to the legislature, and you're saying Bonnell shouldn't matter because it should be what's in the statute. So if the statute's not consistent, what do we do?
Well, when the statute's not consistent, this court should enforce the inconsistency. And I don't know of any doctrine that says that for the doctrine that says that to use one word one place and another word another place, they have to be enacted at the same time. Legislatures act, necessarily they act over time, and there's no temporal limit. If they did one 20 years ago and one today, we assume that when they enact a statute today, they know what they did 20 years ago. And what I'm asking this court to do is to say, to respect the General Assembly's decision to do that. If they don't want to do that, they can change that in the future. But if this court doesn't enforce differences in statutes, then this court has taken away the General Assembly's ability to make those subtle distinctions, and that this court's then requiring them to come back and do it again if they want to. I think legislatures should be careful when they write statutes. We assume that they're careful. Maybe they aren't. In reality, are they always as careful as we'd like them to be? No, they aren't, but we give them the respect that they mean what they said. We don't assume that they made a mistake. And that's what the state's asking this court to do, to assume that the General Assembly made a drafting error. And I'm saying the presumption should be the other way. And I do agree that the distinction between definite and indefinite is not what matters here. These are both indefinite sentences. I don't think that's the distinction that matters. The thing that matters is the one that the General Assembly decided.
So we should ignore Bonnell then and hold them to a talismanic recitation of exactly what the statute says. That's what you're saying, correct?
They should say substantively. Bonnell was about whether, if I remember correctly, trial judges can depart from the exact wording of a statute, but not, the Bonnell didn't say that they could argue in a way that trial courts could make findings that were the contradicted part of the statute, that where there was a separate statute that said something different. And that's what the difference in here is. Bonnell, if I'm remembering correctly, is the case about consecutive sentencing findings maybe Bonnell was really more about, in this case, what the trial court did when the trial court said eligibility instead of possibility of parole. There's no distinction between those two. The General Assembly has never made a distinction between those two. And what I'm asking this, and I think if I were here today arguing difference in eligibility and possibility, a distinction the General Assembly has never made, I think that I would be, in fact, I don't think I would be standing here at this point doing that. My friend on the other side also talked about this was a difference in semantics. Well, that's what the law is. The law is semantics. The law is looking at words and looking at use one word here, a different word here. Why did the General Assembly do that?
Unless
there are any other questions, I want to come back to what I think is the most important point, that this court should, if this court accepts the state's argument, the General Assembly can't make the difference. I think it's my friend who argued this case before also gave this court another example of why this could make a difference. Right now, there is no legal consequence between life with possibility of 15 and 15 to life. But what happens if 10 years from now the General Assembly decides to change that, or 5 years from now, or the parole board decides, no, we really do want to say life matters? Well, then my client all of a sudden has a sentence that says life when it should have said 50, that when it should have started with a term of years. This court is taking away the General Assembly's right to make that distinction in the first place, and then to continue to make that in the future. And when the General Assembly makes a distinction, court should honor it. If the state thinks that this isn't a big enough difference, that's a policy argument that is more appropriate for the General Assembly. I ask this court to affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals, which sends this case back for a resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel.
Defense counsel brings up the point about the subtle distinctions between the sentence for aggravated murder and murder. And while there's no disagreement between us that one is phrased differently, that aggravated murder is life with parole eligibility after a certain amount of time, and murder is 15 years to life, I recognize that distinction. But the question is not whether the General Assembly intended for that distinction. The question is whether or not the General Assembly intended for that distinction to have any legal significance. And as you've seen from the arguments before you, there is no legal distinction whatsoever.
How do we know that?
Well, the best indicator of that is the concession from defense counsel saying that regardless of how he sentenced, life with parole eligibility after 15 years or 15 years to life.
But what if the power of suggestion, I'm sorry to cut you off, but what if the power of suggestion to the parole board is if you're sentenced to life with the possibility of parole 15 years, maybe you're not inclined to get parole. If you're sentenced to 15 years to life, the power of suggestion maybe will be that you get paroled.
Well, the General Assembly could have made that clear.
They did. They said one was 15 years to life.
Well, there's nothing in the look at the Ohio Administrative Code. And if you look at it, I'll direct you to that again. Ohio Administrative Code 5120-2-10G and 5120-2-10K, which deal with the sentence for murder and deal with the sentence for aggravated murder. Both of those subsections of the Ohio Administrative Code are phrased in the exact same way. They both say if so-and-so is serving a prison sentence for, let's say, murder, they become eligible after X amount of years. If they're serving a prison sentence for aggravated murder, they become eligible after so-and-so. So the Ohio Administrative Code doesn't make that presumption or make that indication. And there's nothing in the Ohio Revised Code that indicated that the General Assembly meant that this distinction was meant to mean anything, have any sort of legal distinction.
But they had the benefit of their wording before enacting the subsequent statute. They had the benefit of the previous one. So why don't...
No, I agree. I agree that the wordings are different, and I can't give you an answer as to why one is worded life with parole eligibility after 15 years, and one is 15 years. Why one is 15 years to life. I can't give you an answer for that distinction. But
So maybe if we do affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals, the legislature would be more careful in how they draft statutes.
They might, if their intent was for there to be a distinction between the two different phrasings. And there's nothing in that I've seen that indicates that this was anything other than what Justice Bruner indicated, that this was just statutes that were drafted at separate times and didn't exactly use the same phrasing. So I would just ask this court, if there's any other questions, to reverse the Court of Appeals decision vacating the murder convictions on Tyrone Legrand's murder conviction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?